Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. First on the dock today, maybe a break in the search for the West children. Second, Barry Morphew is moving on. Third, jury selection continues in Minnesota, and another interesting case in Idaho. And let's not forget our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. Thanks for watching. If you haven't done so already, we'd ask you to please hit that subscribe button and then that little bell over in the corner so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And today is Tuesday, so what does that mean? That's right, we are going live tonight at 6 p.m. Mountain Time to discuss the cases that you want to talk about. And immediately after that, our private Patreon session. So if you haven't become a Patreon member, now would be the time to think about doing so. All right, let's get straight to the docket today. Maybe a break in the search for the West children in California. There's been a little new development going on, and hopefully it'll be something positive. For those of you who do not know, it's now been almost 2.5 months since 3-year-old Orson and 4-year-old Oren West were reported missing. Law enforcement is keeping much of their investigation completely under wraps, but what we do know is that according to the police, the facts of the case are still going forward. The boys have not been located, and there have been no arrests up to this point. However, new developments have brought renewed energy to thousands looking for answers. Most recently, law enforcement searched for evidence in a dirt lot in Southeast Bakersfield. It's near the Casa Loma Apartments, where the adoptive parents of Oren and Orson West used to live. This is not the first search that has been conducted in the city of Bakersfield by the Bakersfield Police Department during their participation in this investigation. A police spokesman said that they expect there will be more searches. There's been numerous interviews, search warrants, and that will continue until they know what happened to the West boys. The police would not go into whether any items of evidentiary value were seized from the lot. They would simply say that they searched the lot and they're looking for evidence. Now, normally there's no coincidences in a police investigation of this nature. It's been 2.5 months, but that can take some time for the police to get a lot of data, analyze that data after they've been able to collect it, sift through it, organize it. And so what these searches may be coming from are possible searches from cell phone data that is available to them now, but takes some time to, like I said, accumulate, plot, figure it all out. Hopefully there will be a break in the case if Oren and Orson West are the victims of a crime, or there's always that possibility that they would be returned home safely. Next on the docket, Barry Morphew is moving on. That's right, you remember Barry Morphew, the husband of the missing Colorado mom, Suzanne Morphew. He has sold the home that they shared together for $1.62 million, almost 10 months after his wife's mysterious disappearance. Barry Morphew finalized the sale of the 3-bedroom residence, which is in Salida, on Thursday. The buyer is listed as Mountain Renewal, a limited liability company from Nevada. Barry and Suzanne Morphew's names both appear as the sellers on the deed, meaning money from the sale is likely to be transferred into a joint account. Now, Barry Morphew, who's 52, raised eyebrows last October when he first put his home on the market for $1.75 million, just 5 months after Suzanne Morphew, who was 50 years old, went missing. Suzanne reportedly set off from the home on a bike ride on Mother's Day, May 10th, and has not been seen since. The FBI searched the home twice in the weeks following her disappearance, seizing several items for forensic examination. The couple had lived at the home with their two daughters, Mallory and Macy, since April of 2018. Barry previously told news reporters that he decided to sell the home because Mallory and Macy are too scared to stay there because they believe it was the site of Suzanne Morphew's abduction, which is a little odd because I thought she went on a bike ride and her bike was found down the road. But the family home is not the only property. Barry has also recently sold another piece of property that he recently purchased in Salida for $150,000. It may appear as though the family has decided to give up on the fact that Suzanne Morphew may come home safely. Her father, who passed away recently, actually listed Suzanne Morphew as presumed dead in her father's obituary. Barry Morphew claims that he was in the Denver area working on a landscaping job at the time that his wife disappeared. And co-workers have stated that the hotel room that Barry had booked in the Denver area for the night of May 10th stank of bleach and was littered with wet towels. Not to be made to look like a suspect, Barry Morphew has offered a $100,000 reward for Suzanne's safe return. He previously theorized that his wife may have been taken by a wild animal. He now says he believes that she was abducted. Not exactly sure what has changed his mind. Suzanne's brother, Andy Moorman, has blasted Barry for his behavior following Suzanne's mysterious vanishing, implicating him in her disappearance. Andy Moorman has stated, "I don't think she ever got on her bike. I think she probably died on May 9th, and she was hidden somewhere that night. I'm afraid that this is domestic abuse," according to Mr. Moorman. Now, obviously, we'll give Barry Morphew the presumption of innocence, as he's never been charged with a crime in any way, nor has the Salida police or the sheriff given any indication that he is a person of interest. No word as to where Barry Morphew will be residing after the sale. It's unclear whether he'll stay in Colorado or move on to a different state. We'll keep you posted. Please go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did. Well, the jury selection continues in the case of former police officer Derek Chauvin. The Hennepin County District Court Judge Peter Cahill said that he intends to keep the jury selection process going until the appellate courts tell him otherwise. Now, Chauvin's lawyers filed an appeal with the state Supreme Court after the appellate court issued a ruling on Friday instructing the judge to reinstate a third-degree murder charge against Chauvin after finding that the judge erred in October when he dismissed the count. The state Supreme Court issued an order on Tuesday morning acknowledging it had received the petition from Chauvin's lawyer and gave the prosecutors until 5 p.m. today to file a response. Prosecutors also filed a stay asking that the appellate courts order the district court to stay the proceedings until the appellate issues are in fact resolved. Opening remarks to the jury pool began Tuesday. Cahill said Chauvin has pled not guilty to the charges of second-degree murder and second-degree manslaughter, but added, charges might be added or subtracted as the case goes on. Some judges do that, some don't. It just simply lets the jurors know that there could be changes, there could be lesser-included offenses, charges could be reinstated from the appellate courts. But it's not something that's necessarily going to change the dynamics of the case at this point because evidence has not started. They're still in the process of seating a jury. What the attorneys and the court are trying to do in this particular case is to get enough potential jurors. They're probably going to look for at least 50 that basically can say that they can be fair and impartial, reserve judgment until they hear all the evidence in this case, and then follow the court's instructions. But to do that, you have to get a qualified pool. You want to do that so that not everyone's talking to everybody in the same room and potentially tainting the jurors that maybe, have never heard of this case. We've seen at least one juror who's never seen the video in the George Floyd matter today. So, as I've said before, you'll be amazed, but you will find people that have no idea what's going on in the world. Sometimes they make the perfect jurors. One of the potential jury pool members was very excited to be there. She was super excited and can't wait to get started. I'm always a little hesitant to people that really, really want to be there, particularly if it's kind of a high profile case, versus are they here to serve out their community service, so to speak, their responsibility as a good citizen to show up for jury duty. That's a lot different than I'm really, really excited to be here. You just have to feel those jurors out and we'll wait and see. Next on the docket, another interesting case out of Idaho. So this case is somewhat old, but Whitney Murphy was found deceased in her Idaho home in 2014. The police originally thought that the death was the result of a home invasion. Now, 6 years later, authorities are pointing the finger at her husband, whom they allege possibly murdered the 26-year-old and staged a robbery just weeks after he took out a lucrative $650,000 life insurance policy. Jimmy Lee Murphy was slapped with several charges this past week, including the charge of first-degree murder in connection with his wife's October 14th death. When authorities tried to arrest Mr. Murphy outside his mobile home about an hour outside of Twin Falls, Idaho on Wednesday, he allegedly attempted to flee, forcing officers to tackle him, and they had to subdue him with a stun gun. What are we talking about there, ladies and gentlemen? Consciousness of guilt. Why would he run? Now, we'll certainly give Mr. Murphy the presumption of innocence, but he's got some facts that he's going to have to overcome. Court documents allege that investigators arrived at the Murphy residence on October 2014 after receiving a call about a shooting at the home that left a neighbor wounded. When investigators arrived, they found Whitney Murphy deceased from a single shot to her head. At the time, investigators believed the 26-year-old had come home and interrupted an armed robbery in progress, though nothing was missing aside from Mr. Murphy's shotgun. Notably, court documents state the court's portable safe that contained some $30,000 in cash, Whitney's purse, and other firearms were still in the house. Authorities now believe that the firearm, which was never recovered, was used in the slaying. Murphy told the police that he found his wife fatally shot at their home after going to wash his truck and run some errands for his boss. Now, Mr. Murphy's boss said he denied ever telling Mr. Murphy to, quote, water the farm, end quote, that day. Court documents also state that investigators found a text message from Mr. Murphy to his wife that night telling her to come home so that they can engage in being intimate, which is somewhat contradictory to the previous information that Mr. Murphy was not sexually interested in his wife and was in fact having an affair. Now, Mr. Murphy allegedly had shotgun residue on his hands when he was initially interviewed by police, which he had first claimed was from shooting pigeons earlier in the day. That story later changed and said he didn't actually go hunting. In fact, he doesn't even have a hunting license in any way. Mr. Murphy's story continued to unravel, according to court documents, when he ultimately admitted to cheating on Whitney after they had had several fights. Mr. Murphy did take out the $650,000 life insurance policy on his wife just weeks before she was murdered. The insurance company denied Murphy's claim after her death and then refused to pay for her funeral. 3 days after his wife's death, a relative of his wife allegedly confronted Murphy at a local store about the incident and accused him of being the murderer. And he stated, quote, maybe I did, maybe I didn't, end quote. Poor choice of words indeed. His counsel would probably tell him, don't ever say that, ever, to anyone, ever. All right. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Our dumb criminal contestant of the day. This guy's story is so good, he's going to be a contestant twice. because a judge has ordered that Cody Meador undergo a competency evaluation. That's not good. People in the court, when they start thinking that they have competency issues, think that they don't understand or appreciate what's going on. But that could help the young Mr. Meador in this particular situation. As you may recall, Mr. Meador got in trouble a little bit last year about this time when he sexually assaulted a stuffed unicorn in the Target store, which was videotaped. Mr. Meador admitted to pleasuring himself with the unicorn and doing some weird things. And, well, let's just say they had to photograph the unicorn and dispose of it for sanitary reasons. So, Mr. Meador, you're back in the game. Why? Because you're still in the game a year later and you're still being evaluated for competency issues. Your story's so good, Mr. Meador, you can be a dumb criminal contestant, not once, but now twice. We'll continue to follow Mr. Meador's competency issues throughout the court proceedings. Now, certainly we take that very seriously. We wish Mr. Meador the best in all of his legal and mental health issues for sure. And as always, we give him the presumption of innocence. All right, today is Tuesday. Please join us at 6 p.m. live tonight on both YouTube and Facebook. Mountain Time, that is, 6 p.m. Mountain Time. And then immediately after that, we will do our Patreon live show. Please join us. Thanks for watching. Have a great day.